Very engaged in the government, as all of the Rishonim point out here. The fact of the matter is that the next Mishnah, the preceding Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, actually says, "V'chol ha," I underline this part, "V'chol ha'amelim im hatzibur yihiyu amelim imahem l'shem shamayim." That this is actually within the same basic section of the Mishnah that deals with tzorchei tzibur. And the Mishnah simply reminds us that if we're going to work on behalf of the Tzibor, we should do so l'shem shamayim, not for the sense of self-aggrandizement or prestige, but for the sake of shem shamayim and the welfare of the Jewish people. So again, hevuzahirim birishus doesn't mean that we shouldn't advocate on behalf of the Jewish community, that we should not be politically active. On the contrary, I think it means that we have to be, but we should do so realistically without any sense of naivete, that of course governmental officials have their own broad agenda, and even if they can speak very often in highly flattering terms, we have to be somewhat circumspect. So I would say that this is the second basic principle of interaction with government, is not to be naive and not to be, you know, overly swayed by very kind and sweet words which are offered, and to recognize that these things can change very, very quickly. So that's the second major principle of interaction with government. The third and final principle of interaction with government, and I think it's of particular importance now in the red-hot, polarized climate in which we live, and certainly people are entitled to their own opinion, in particular about current events, but I just wanted to say something that everybody agrees to. This is the third and final general principle of interaction with government, is a Medrash Tanchuma, which Rashi cites really on multiple occasions throughout Sefer Shmos, in particular between the interactions between Moshe Rabbeinu and Aharon and Paro. The Medrash says as follows. This is a ninth source. Mikan shechalak Moshe kavod the malchus. Shelo amar lei. Moshe never said to Paro, "Ata v'chol abadecha." This is in the scene when Moshe is describing matas b'choros. Paro himself would actually need to go seek help from Moshe Rabbeinu. But the way that Moshe formulates it in the text is v'yardu chol abadecha ele elai. That you Paro aren't going to do it. It's going to be your avadim. Now that's not true. Paro, actually, the pasuk says vayakum Paro laila. So Paro is the one that got up himself, and he was literally banging on the doors. The famous Rashi, Heichan Moshe, Heichan Aaron. But Moshe didn't want to speak to him disrespectfully. And this Medrash Tanchuma goes and says it's not just Moshe and Aaron, but this is a cardinal principle of our interactions with whoever the governmental authority is. Yosef was careful to interact with Paro this way. Daniel was careful to interact with Nebuchadnezzar this way. Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah were careful to interact this way. And we're dealing here with some very, very objectionable characters, right? Paro was actually enslaving the Jewish people. So whatever we think about a particular government authority, it's very important to be aware of this, of Chilku Kabo de Malchus. It doesn't mean that we're not allowed to be critical. That's certainly not what I'm saying. It doesn't mean that we're not allowed to be strongly critical, but it means that at the core of our remarks has to be a basic awareness of Chilku Kavo da Malchus, and this is something which, again, is very deeply ensconced within our tradition, and if it could be applied to somebody like Paro, a genocidal figure, or Nebuchadnezzar, so certainly within the contemporary context, this bears keeping in mind. So just to review the three basic, what I call universal principles of interaction with government, we're about to start talking about the United States of America. Number one is to have an appreciation of Shloma Shel Malchus, our halachic responsibility to daven on behalf of the government, because we recognize that the alternative, the state of nature, is a frightful one indeed. Rabbeinu Yonah had a more expansive view of that, as we saw. Rabbeinu Yonah says it's not just the government, but the government is a representative body of all citizens of your location, really everybody in the world, and we should have a sense of tsa'ar, bitsa'aran shel rabin. Principle number one. Principle number two is that we shouldn't be naive. Hevu zehirin birishus. We have to be careful about government. Ein mekarvin lo la'adam, ela la'hanas letzorech atzman. Nirin ka'oavin b'shas hana'asan, ein omdin lo la'adam b'shas dochko. That we have to have an awareness that sometimes people speak a certain way, but the policies can change very, very quickly. This doesn't mean we shouldn't advocate or we should insulate ourselves on behalf of government. I pointed out that the immediately preceding Mishnah is Chol ha'amelim mimatzibur yiyu amelim mimahem l'shem shamayim, that we are supposed to engage in tzorchei tzibur, but it is important to be aware that very often, people can speak one way and not have a very long-term commitment to whatever it is they're saying. And the third principle of interaction with government is Chilku Kavo da Malchus, and I highlight that this was said with respect to Malachim, who were highly objectionable, really murderous types of figures, and even so, Moshe and Aharon and others, Yosef, Daniel, Hanan, Mishael, Azariah, all observed this basic principle that we certainly have to keep a certain modicum of civility, dignity, and respect in terms of the way that we speak about things, even and especially when we disagree very strongly. I think all these things are generally true. What I'd like to try to spend the second half of this year developing is how I think these principles take on a unique meaning in the case of our very special relationship with the United States of America, a relationship that I'll try to detail very briefly. So if you take a look here at the 10th source, this is a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, so it obviously does not relate to the United States of America. Sefer Dvarim preceded the advent of the United States of America by a number of years. But it is an important perspective to bear on our relationship with the United States of America. So here, the Torah is discussing certain individuals who, even after they convert, are not allowed to immediately enter the Jewish people. So, for example, if a male from Ammon or Moab converts, an Ammonite or a Moabite, he converts, so even the 10th generation, he's not permitted to marry into the main body of the Jewish people. If somebody of Egyptian extraction or Edomite extraction converts, so their grandchildren are allowed to enter the main body of the Jewish people. And the Torah gives us an actual reason for this. Very often the Torah says things and doesn't explain what the reasons are. This is not one of those instances. So the Torah says, Lo sisa'ev mitzri, that we're not supposed to utterly reject the mitzri, ki ger hayisa be'artzo, because you were taken in as strangers in the land of Egypt. Now, it's also true that the Egyptians then went on to enslave us and throw all of our boys into the Nile River. And yet the Torah is telling us, don't forget that when Yaakov and his sons could have starved to death in the famine, Rashi quotes, Na'asei slo achsanya b'shas hadchak. They were your hosts when you really needed them. And as a result of that, we never forget a debt of gratitude in Judaism. Hakaras HaTov is a great value, perhaps first among equals. Chovos HaLevavos takes that position. We never forget what the Egyptians did for us, even though subsequent to that, the oppression obviously speaks for itself. So I always like to draw a very powerful Kal Vachomer. If the Torah is telling us we can't forget those years when the Egyptians took us in, when we otherwise could have faced annihilation due to the intense famine that we find in Sefer Bereishis, Kal Vachomer ben bino shel Kal Vachomer. How much more so the United States of America has taken in our people, obviously in different waves over the course, primarily over the last 140 years or so. Certainly Jewish settlement in the New World, so to speak, goes back 400 years. But in massive, massive, massive numbers since the 1880s, more than Naseh Slo Achsanya B'Shas Hatzchak, the very fact that we can be here, that we have such freedom and such quality of life in terms of our material existence, our religious existence, the Torah, if it says you can't forget that the Egyptians took care of you, even though they subsequently enslaved you and murdered you, so Kal Vachomer, that we have to have a profound sense of Hakaras HaTov to the United States of America. What I just want to try to do right now, I'm sure many of you are aware of some of these sources, but to try to instantiate this both in the behavior of Washington and Lincoln with some very famous historical documents, the primary sources themselves, and then to bring things to a conclusion with a bit of a more contemporary perspective, reading a very famous tshuva of Moshe Feinstein, and concluding with the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. So this is a letter, as you see here, from August the 21st, 1790, written by President George Washington, obviously the first president, to the Hebrew congregation at Newport, Rhode Island. I'm sure many of you have visited the Truro Synagogue. My wife and I, before we became parents, went there. That seems like a quaint memory. It was very calm. It's a lovely, lovely place to visit. And this is what George Washington, you can actually see the letter posted on the wall in the back of the shul. I'm sure some of you have been there. Gentlemen, Washington, by the way, was famous for his Derech Eretz. You read this letter and you get a sense of an incredibly refined person, very respectful person. Washington actually kept his little he authored it himself, little Sefer of Musar, in his pocket, where he wrote down little moral notes to himself, like, if somebody is talking to you and they're standing and you're sitting, get up. You know, things like that. So you see from this letter, by the way, just how respectful he was as a person, which is, something we should all admire. Gentlemen, while I received with much satisfaction your address, replete with expressions of esteem, that is to say, you wrote me a very nice letter, I rejoice in the opportunity of assuring you that I shall always retain grateful remembrance of the cordial welcome I experienced on my visit to Newport from all classes of citizens. George Washington had been in Newport, Rhode Island, and he was welcomed not just by the majority, who of course were not Jewish, but what he's alluding to when he says all classes of citizens, of course, members of the Jewish people, which we'll say explicitly in just a few paragraphs. The reflection on the days of difficulty and danger which are past, right, the Revolutionary War, which is some 10 to 12 years, Revolutionary War concludes 1781, so we're talking about some 10 years afterwards. The reflection on the days of difficulty and danger which are past is rendered the more sweet from a consciousness that they are succeeded by days of uncommon prosperity and security. See, the country is already really coalescing and coming together. If we have wisdom to make the best use of the advantages with which we are now favored, we cannot fail, under the just administration of a good government, to become a great and happy people. The citizens of the United States of America have a right to applaud themselves for having given to mankind examples of an enlarged and liberal policy, a policy worthy of imitation. All possess alike liberty of conscience and immunities of citizenship. That is to say, that people have the liberty to think what they want to think, to believe what they want to believe, and to be protected in those beliefs through their citizenship. It is now no more that toleration is spoken of as if it were the indulgence of one class of people that another enjoyed the exercise of their inherent natural rights. For happily, this is the most famous part, and justly so, the government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, requires only that they who live under its protection to demean themselves as good citizens and giving it on all occasions their effectual support. All the government asks is for us to be law-abiding citizens. And George Washington in 1790 said the United States of America will not be a place where prejudice is tolerated, will not be a place where bigotry is tolerated. Of course, Jews had never experienced that throughout their history, to be able to go to a place and have the leader of that country say in unequivocal terms, you're going to be all right here. You're going to be protected here. We're going to take care of you. There's no prejudice you have to worry about, no bigotry you have to be concerned about. If you're good and loyal citizens, we're going to make sure to take care of you. And then he concludes, it would be inconsistent with the frankness of my character not to avow that I am pleased with your favorable opinion of my administration and fervent wishes for my felicity. Thanks for saying nice things about me. I'm glad that you think I'm doing a good job. May the children of the stock of Abraham, B'nai Avram, Jewish people, who dwell in this land, continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants. God willing, the relationships will always be strong. Shouldn't be anti-Semitism. Well, everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree. Can anybody tell me that pasuk in Hebrew that George Washington is referring to? Ish tachas gafno v'tachas kenaso. Excellent, Nathanael, right? George Washington knew his Bible, right? So he says you should all live under your own fig trees and grapevines, and there should be none to make him afraid. Ve'ein macharid, quoting from the Psukim in Yirmiyahu. May the Father of all mercies scatter light and not darkness upon our paths, and make us all in our several vocations useful here, and in his own due time and way, everlastingly happy. So you really can't imagine a letter that offered more direct reassurance to the Jewish people that they would be protected in the United States of America. And to appreciate what this meant at the time, you have to understand that the American people, as I'm sure all of our students learned about in American history, we're prepared to make George Washington king. That was his stature here. George Washington, to his eternal credit, not only wouldn't become a king, but he made sure that to leave, he could have, you know, there weren't term limits till after FDR, could have been elected in perpetuity, and he wants to go home to Virginia. And he really created this sense of a democracy and not the rule of one person, of a government of one, but a government, a true republic. And George Washington's stature, his letter, what this meant to the Jewish people, and what it continues to mean to the Jewish people, that we have this document that says, look, this is from the very beginning. This is 1790, 2 years into the first administration, the United States of America, is such a powerful document indeed. So on a day like today, certainly our Hakaras HaTov to George Washington, again, if the Torah said, Lo Sisa'ev Mitzri Ki Ger Ha'isa Ba'artso, that we have to remember that the Egyptians not only made us suffer, but did some good for us. Certainly, Hakaras HaTov to George Washington, 1790, the 21st of August. We're also, of course, remembering today Abraham Lincoln. Many of you are aware that the only time in American history where Jews were expelled from their homes as Jews happened in the midst of the Civil War. In December of 1863, he was then not yet the general of the United States Army. He would become Ulysses S. Grant. He was certainly not yet the 18th President of the United States of America. But Ulysses S. Grant was making a name for himself as the most successful Union commander in the Western theater of the Civil War. And while in the Eastern Theater, the primary theater in Virginia, the United States was having a terrible time with Robert E. Lee and suffering defeat after defeat after defeat. When it came to the Western Theater, things were very successful under General Grant. And General Grant was developing a very, very strong following. And it's for that reason that he was brought over east. And he, of course, becomes the famous unconditional surrender, U.S. Grant, that everybody knows about from the history books. The reason I'm mentioning that is he's a person of enormous stature. And his stature is growing, particularly at this time. So in December 17th, 1863, Major General Ulysses S. Grant issues General Order Number 11. Now, just a little bit of the background here is that Grant had been able to subdue areas that had been under rebellion, parts of Tennessee, Kentucky, and Mississippi. And there was a concern on the part of the Union Army that the South was still able to sustain itself through the cotton trade, even though they were obviously imposing an embargo, a naval blockade, on the trade of Southern cotton. And General Grant in particular was concerned about Jews who were involved in this trade. Okay? It wasn't only Jews. So he issues General Order Number 11. The Jews, this is the text of the order, as a class violating every regulation of trade established by the Treasury Department, in other words, not supposed to be trading in Southern cotton, and also department orders, are hereby expelled from the Department of the Tennessee, as I mentioned, it actually encompassed areas in three different states, within 24 hours from the receipt of this order. In other words, not a lot of time to pack up and sell your house, okay? Post commanders will see to it that all of this class of people, that is the Jews, be furnished passes and required to leave. This is not optional. And anyone returning after such notification will be arrested and held in confinement until an opportunity occurs of sending them out as prisoners unless furnished with permit from headquarters. Number three, no passes will be given these people, the Jews, to visit headquarters for the purpose of making personal application of trade permits. There's no appeals process. This is the only time in American history that Jews were expelled from their homes. And indeed, many Jews, Jewish communities in all of these areas, literally had to go, like we had so many times throughout our history, leave their homes, leave their communities, leave their belongings, and went from being settled and protected as citizens of this country to being people who were literally refugees. Now, I mentioned before the importance of political advocacy. Professor Jonathan Sarno recently wrote a book about this about 5 years ago, maybe about 10 years ago now, when General Grant expelled the Jews. It's a wonderful short book. I encourage all of the students here to read it, and the parents as well, if you have a little bit of extra time. So you can read about, over the next month, how the Jewish community was able to organize and really go to lobby in Washington, this is before the NORPAC missions, okay, go to lobby in Washington and say, wait a minute, this is not fair. If somebody is doing a criminal act, then of course they should be prosecuted, whether they're Jewish or not. But as a class, to say that all Jews are engaging in criminal activity, we're talking about men, women, children, the elderly, this has no place here. And they go to Lincoln, and Lincoln agrees with them. And even though it's not, you know, the 21st century, it's not 2017, so it couldn't happen overnight, but in very short order, this General Order Number 11 is reversed by President Lincoln, and he tells the head of the army, and he tells General Halleck, and I'll read the document, okay, a paper purporting to be, this is a very interesting line, a paper purporting to be general, this is literally 1 month later, paper purporting to be General Orders Number 11 issued by you December 17th has been presented here. By its terms, it expels all Jews from your department. So this is, again, from the General-in-Chief of the Union Army, Henry Wager Halleck, who's acting as Lincoln's shaliach, as his emissary in this regard. He says, if such an order has been issued, he doesn't want to accuse Grant of doing something so against the ethos of the American spirit. But if such an issue has been issued, if such an order has been issued, so if you did this, it will be immediately revoked. This has no legal standing. And indeed, General Grant spent a good part of the rest of his life actually trying to do tshuva from this. It's well known that General Grant hired more Jews into his administration than any other president before that. In 1874, so only about 11 and a half years after he issued this order, General Grant became the first, President Grant at that time, became the first American president to go to the dedication of a shul, Congregation Agudat Israel, which is still a functioning conservative congregation in Washington, D.C. It opened 1874. He made sure to go himself. Felt very, very badly about this. So I don't mean to malign General Grant as, you know, a historic anti-Semite, but he does have this on his record. More importantly, President Lincoln would not stand for it. And even under the incredible pressures of war, and I have to emphasize that point, incredible pressures on President Lincoln at this time. The war in general was not going well. And it would have been easy for him to say, look, if there are these people who are undermining our efforts to cripple the southern economy, we're just going to have to live with that. You know, dangerous times, we've got to speak in broad terms, but Lincoln was not prepared to tolerate that. And that's a very important lesson. And so we have to have a karas hatov, not just to George Washington for his setting the tone, that the United States of America will not be a place where bigotry is sanctioned and prejudice is tolerated, but President Lincoln as well, because when the chips were down, and the only time in our American history when we were actually exiled in this country, it was President Lincoln who stood up for us. And of course, we remember him, Litova, on this very day. I just wanted to spend the last 5 minutes or so of this year reading a tshuva of Moshe Feinstein that I think really speaks to the way that this gadol, who had spent the early years of his life in Russia and certainly knew what a cruel and arbitrary government was, and he comes to the Jewish people, he comes to the land of America, and he tries to formulate what the relationship between the Jewish people and the government of this United States of America, this country that he had immigrated to, that he had been literally welcomed into, Lower East Side. And this tshuva is very famous tshuva for certain phrases, but I thought that I would actually read it in its entirety with your permission. It's not that long a tshuva. Rav Moshe is responding to certain reports that he's heard that yeshivas are engaged in dishonest practices, where they were receiving a certain amount of funding from the government per capita based on the number of students that they had, and that they were inflating these numbers of students to extract more money from the government. In other words, engaging in dishonest practices so as to get more money, you know, and defending it on the basis of, well, look, you know, it's for the sake of Talmud Torah, we'll have more money to support the yeshiva. This is what Moshe Feinstein is responding to in this tshuva. So the reason I want to read this tshuva, first of all, you get a sense of the man's integrity. If you haven't seen any of his tshuvas before, that's number one. But number two, and even more important for purposes of today's shir, to sort of see the attitude that he as an immigrant had towards the United States of America. And bear in mind, you know, the fact that he's born and raised and spends the early years of his life through his teenage years in Russia, and he knows that there is an alternative, right? He knows that this can't be taken for granted. It's really a beautiful document. So let's just read the tshuva together. The iser of institutions of Torah taking more from the government than is absolutely allowed by the law. So he starts out by referring not to the specific issue at hand, but the inyone hachesed asher hamemshala shalanu artos habris beAmerica, shehashem yisbarach birachamav hamerubim al she'eris hapleita meyehudi kol medunes Europa u'she'eris gedolei haTorah talmideihem hevi anu lachan. So he starts out by saying that this government which engages in chesed, and is it an act of divine compassion that we've been brought here from Europe, the remnants of the Jewish people. This is, of course, being written after the war, after the Holocaust, and the remnants, those who survived, of those who studied Torah, Havianu Lachan, Vinostu Mikomos HaTorah, Yeshenim Shem at Europe, Begam Chadashim, and so the European yeshivos could be reconstituted here, and new institutions of Torah should be opened. The Al Yidei, this is the most famous line, but it's not the only line, Shemalcho Shol Chesed Zo, that this Malchus of Chesed, Shekol Matarasa, look at how Rav Moshe conceptualized the United States of America, Shekol Matarasa, the entire purpose of this government, as far as he understands it, Hu Lehetiv L'chol Toshvei HaMedina, is to enhance the lives of its citizens. Remember, Rav Moshe knows that most governments in the world operate for their own benefit, to line their own pockets, and corruption that he had exposed to as a young man. And he says, this place is unbelievable. This government has one basic idea in mind, which is to enhance the lives of its citizens. And for Moshe, that was a chiddush. So he says, when it comes to our dealings with that government, Shekol Matarasa Leheiti L'chol Toshvei HaMedina, Himtzia Chama Inyanim Shel Programin Lazor L'Talmidim Shebechol Batei HaSefer Shemedida Sheyuchu Lomo Lizgadol Bilimudam. So he says, as a function of this, the government has an educational policy, where the government will spend money on each and every student, so they should be able to grow in their education. Remarkable idea. You see how Rav Moshe understood the idea of government supporting education. Shigam Mosto Satora Yeshlam Ezra Gedola Tamideim, and of course it also benefits the yeshivos. Vadai, he says, without a doubt, it's inconceivable to him, Kol Rosh Yeshivos Haminali Matamidim Makirim Bechol Tovos Hamidin. It's inconceivable that any Rosh Yeshiva, any principal, or even any student doesn't recognize this and show gratitude to the wonderful country in which we live, umivarchim l'shalom hamedina, to bring the sheer full circle, and are always blessing the welfare of this government, to the chola omdim b'rosha, the chola brachos. We only want the very best for this country. Aval vadai, anachnu muzharim me'ashem yizbarach shetzivanu b'toraso akadosha. We have been commanded many times over in God's sacred Torah, lizar milikach yoser mikfi shetanaya memshala kabu litein. We are never allowed to take any more than the law explicitly stipulates. Av sheyecholim lahasig yoser me'ezer pekidim sheyirtzu lehetiv lahem shelo ke'atnai makavum. This remarkable line. He says, even if there is a rogue official from the government who says, I'm going to look the other way, I want your votes, so I'll say it's okay, you inflate the numbers, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. Moshe says it's aser. No side deals, no dishonesty. Even if you could say, well look, the mayor said it's okay, or the deputy mayor said it's okay, or the education commissioner said it's okay because I'm going to vote for him in his next election. No way. That's not allowed. The law is the law. V'chol shekein she'asur l'shaker b'mispar ha'talmide v'chadome. And certainly there's an iser d'oraisa to lie about the number of students. Shelavachu iser gezel. Certainly it's stealing. Harei ika bazeh gam yisurim ha'gedolim shalamir ha'shkayim. It's lying. U'gnei basdas. It's deceiving people. V'gam chil Hashem u'bizayon ha'torah v'lom deha. And above all, it's a terrible disgrace to God's name, and it demeans the Torah itself. There is no conceivable permission for this kind of behavior. And just as God despises stealing when it's for the purposes of corruption, likewise, God despises that Torah should be quote-unquote, advanced through dishonest means. Remarkable line. V'ikav ezeh gam yishum rodev eskdoli ha-torah v'talmideyam anizharim b'yoser mishem etzgezel v'chadome. And of course, you're compromising the positions of the Rosh HaYeshiva, who of course, if any of this is substantiated, people will look at Torah in a very negative light. V'av shachas v'shalom l'nechshu de Rosh HaYeshivos. Moshe is being very respectful, that God forbid nobody's actually suspecting that a Rosh HaYeshiva or a menahel or principal would ever be involved in this kind of activity. Shem yirei shamayim lavor al yisur gezel v'imrei sheker v'chazav nevetas. Below al dina de malchusa, and they never would violate. We spoke before about dina malchusa. B'shum aras heter ba'olam ki yodim mechomer yisurim. Certainly, Rav Moshe says, I'm confident they know how serious these matters are. And then Rav Moshe says, beginning of the next line, who kineged kol tachlis yisori yeshivos alimut sham la tamidim lios yirei Hashem be'emes uizari b'zirei mamon b'yoser. And he says, it's against the very ethos of having an educational institution. What message are you sending the students if you're going to tell them that it's okay to steal to advance education? You're undermining the educational mission of the institution, which is to produce honest people. And Rav Moshe says that they should be careful. We want our students and our graduates lizayir bi isurei mamon biyoser, that they should be exceptionally careful, particularly when it comes to matters of finances. So Rav Moshe says, I wouldn't suspect anybody of these kinds of activities. Nonetheless, mikol makom matzanu lenachon la'orer bazeh kedei lashgiach biyoser gam amiznadvim. We want to make sure that all the volunteers and the lay leaders are aware of these things as well. Then, just to skip down to the very last few lines here, in the interest of time, l'chol nizharim biyoser tavolam birchas tov. Anybody who's careful about these things should, of course, be blessed by God. V'yatzlichu b'mostos ha-Torah. And God will grant our Torah institution success. L'harbos talmidim yirei shamayim. Asher hu bracha gedola gam l'hamadina. This is, I think, the most remarkable part. People overlook this part of the tshuva. It says, by graduating honest talmidim, that the graduate should be inculcated with the message of honesty and never deceiving the government. This will be good also for the United States of America. Kasher yadua mefursam lakol, as it is well known to everybody, asher talmidei hayeshivos, and look at Rav Moshe's pride in this, that the graduates of our yeshiva system, heim hamuvcharim, they are the elite, baruch Hashem, mehaazrachim, mehmidoseim, maaseim hatovim, because everybody knows, and Rav Moshe's not saying this with any tinge of irony, Everybody knows that the greatest citizens in the United States of America are the products of the yeshiva system in terms of their honesty, their commitment to the government, their commitment to the welfare of the United States of America. Remarkable tshuva on so many different levels. First of all, that sense of gratitude that this government really is a chiddush der of Moshe, a government that first and foremost is concerned with the welfare of the citizens, and that's what education policy is all about. And God forbid we should disrespect that, and that our ultimate goal here is not just to produce Talmidei Chachamim, which certainly was very important to Rav Moshe Feinstein, but to produce, above all, their Acharetz Kadma LaTorah. And the first question the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, says we're asked, you know, when we come to Beis Din Shomala, the second question is, Kavati Itim LaTorah, did you make sure to study Torah? First question that we're asked is, Nasata V'Natata Be'emuna, did we engage in honest business practice? And the care that Rav Moshe took to express this idea that no institute of Torah should be ever involved in deception of the government, because that would undermine the entire educational mission of the institution and would essentially be a kfuy tova, a lack of gratitude to this mamacha shel chesed, shakol matarasa lehetiv letoshaveha, whose entire purpose is to do well by its citizens, I think really speaks for itself. So in terms of our relationship with the United States of America, this will wrap it up. It's not just the general values that we spoke about in the beginning of this year in terms of Hispal b'shlomo shel malchus, because otherwise there will be disorder and chilku kavod malchus, that even when you're dealing with a tyrant like Paro or Nebuchadnezzar, that we have to have a basic level of respect. When it comes to the United States of America, our sense of hakaras hatov has to run very, very, very deep. It starts with George Washington, that beautiful letter from August 21st, 1790, making sure that it would be known, that the tone would be set at the beginning, that the Jewish people, as he calls them, the children of Abraham, would be protected. When the chips were down, there was a tremendous amount of pressure on Lincoln, and his most successful general, his only successful general, was expelling the Jews. Lincoln said, even during a time of war, even when there's a national security threat, it's not acceptable to discriminate against the Jewish people, against any class of citizens. Certainly stands a powerful reminder of the values of this country, and to Lincoln we express our hakaras hatov. And then we have this beautiful tshuva of Moshe Feinstein, where he just points out what was so obvious to him as an immigrant to this country from Russia, but perhaps we take for granted, that this government and its history, the deeply rooted values of this country, that the government isn't for the advancement of those who are in government or in public office, but kol matarasa lehetiv im toshaveha, a government which is oriented, as it says, of course, in the Constitution, to the general welfare of the people, the government whose responsibility is to advance the people. Certainly, we should have respect for that government and to make sure that we're loyal citizens, and through our loyalty and honesty, enhance the United States of America. Just wanted to finish with one final Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, some Mishnah that I've been thinking about a lot these last number of months, and certainly consistent with the themes that we discussed today. And I say it both as a teaching and also a bit of a tefillah as well, because I really think that these are the values, historically speaking, as we've seen, of the United States of America. And God willing, they should continue to be the values of the United States of America. And Americans should always keep these three things in mind, and especially we should keep these three things in mind. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam, I actually really should have had the girsa here of Kayam. The first Mishnah Navos of Shimon HaTzadik, he says, Al Shlosha Dvarim Olam Ein. He really says, the proper girsa here is, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Al Shlosha Dvarim Olam Kayam, that the world runs through three things. Al Hadin, through respect for law, respect for an independent judiciary, making sure that there's accountability, number one. Ve'al ha'emes, a basic respect for truth. Facts are respected. Truth is respected. It was Senator Moynihan said, everybody's entitled to his opinion, not everybody's entitled to his own facts. Al ha'emes, ve'al ha'shalom, and through an orientation towards peace, that we should never be trying to sow division, we should always be trying to bring people together. These three elements, I think, are hallmarks of the United States of America, the values for which this country has always stood. Din represents for the rule, a representation of the rule of law, number one. Al ha'emes, a respect for truth, and that should be the basis for all civil discourse. And number three, al ha'shalom, an attempt to bring people close together. Shenemar emes u'mishpat shalom shiftu b'sharechem, and halavai, we should continue to enjoy the benefits of this remarkable country as we have going back to the days of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Thank you all very much for participating this morning.